So, hello to everybody. Hello, Adima. So technically everything is ready now to start. Adima, you want to say something in the beginning or we just ask you questions?
Okay, so yes, hello everyone, and namaste. Beautiful to see you here, and I wonder in this moment, except for my beloved Sudeva, my partner, are there any English speakers here? For which I had the idea. That's why I asked for an English show. But anyway, let's keep it in English. It was announced like that. And beautiful that you're here. Okay.
So I can ask you a first question, Adima.
Sure.
What do you mean is the way to live a life wisely? Is it possible to give a general question, answer to that?
First, we would need to look into what means wise. When we understand wisdom to be something else than information or knowledge, that is how it is often used in the spiritual context, right? That wisdom is something else than information or knowledge. Information and knowledge being part of intellect, part of mind, and wisdom, it's already difficult now to give the definition. Wisdom being bigger than that, including the heart, including intuition, including sensitivity. And for me, it means wisdom means being able to respond to what is here in the moment. That also has to do with wisdom or living wisely. So, in that regard, I can recommend that. Apart from that, I don't believe that there is any formula at all possible, neither a spiritual one, nor a worldly one, nor a religious one, or a moralistic one, or a scientific one. There is no formula that can actually guide all of us, or all types of people. We would all love to have a formula, right? We want an orientation. What am I making of this life? Does it make any sense? Is that wise? Is it effective? Is it productive? Is it all sorts of things that we have heard it should be? And then we look for formulas how to make that happen. And now, in a certain realm, and that is the realm of cause and effect, we can use formulas. They work in that context. But what we're looking for, and especially when we are on a path that makes us shift the view from outside in. When we're on a path that walks towards understanding the mysterious, the spiritual, the unexplainable. Then these things between cause and effect, they don't really work. Consciousness being here in the now is not an effect of a cause. It's a beingness, it's a happening, it's as so often difficult to pick the right word, but it's not the effect of a cause. And what we're looking for, whether it's called revelation of oneness or self-realization or inner peace, or just the right self-regulation. How do I do my meditation? How do I regulate my traumatic imprints? Whatever it is. Only to a certain level we can influence also this body-mind system with methods that work with cause and effect. And wisdom, or living wisely, includes that. It can include that. Yes, please include it. Use it when applicable. Use it when necessary, the methods. But living wisely, in my view, it exceeds that. It goes past and beyond the realm of cause and effect, and that which we can explain and that which we can grasp and have and do right or do wrong. The thing with the formulas is whether they can be very well meant, and like, do your meditation regularly and that will have all sorts of beneficial effects on you. The thing with the formulas is that they have exceptions, that life is teaching us the exceptions, and that they can easily get in the way in our mind when we hang in with that too intensely or too long. They can cause fear if I don't do what the teacher says or what the book says or what the instruction is, then something terrible is going to happen, and so on and so forth. We all know this, right? Yeah. Some worry that when we fail in our practice or when we don't meditate or when we don't fit into the expectations we have on ourselves concerning being loving, compassionate, and so on, we tend to react to that and then get afraid that something is going wrong. It is wise to assume that everything that happens to us, including the errors and the mistakes we make and the shadows we are standing in sometimes, the derailments we produce, the psycho-emotional experiences, all and everything is included in living wisely by welcoming it, by exploring, by being it, by watching it. So maybe that is somehow, somehow a useful formula. I suggest it is wise to expect that anything and everything is possible in every moment for each and every one of us, and that's before and during and after awakening.
In practical life, the cause of effect and cause, it works so well. When my computer does something differently than other times, I ask why, what is happening? And for my mind, it seems to be difficult to to make there a separation between the practical things and the things that are more wisely, more spiritual, that there is a difference. Can you?
There is no difference. It's very, very, very good that you put that out, Devasi, to thank you. With practical things, I believe I mentioned that in the beginning. Yeah, in the entire realm of practicality, of science, cause and effect and the formulas and the rules are completely necessary and well applied. And we should use that. Yeah, we cannot meet. Well, sometimes maybe it works to pray that the computer starts working again, and it does, and we don't know why. But it's very difficult to approach practical matters with spiritual or esoteric methods. And that is the difficulty. There is a big realm, and that also concerns us, these body-mind systems. There's a whole universal world inside of us that is reacting well to cause and effect. When we start on the path, when we start learning meditation, or we start learning a healing technique, or any of these things that help us transform, they follow the rules of method, structure, and order, and step-by-step processes. And we can see how this has affected that, and then that came out of that. It's just that ultimately the freedom most of us here long for, the final liberation, that is not an effect of a cause. And the mind would love to believe that and hold on to it. And I even heard from some of my teachers in the past that when you practice this, you will get enlightened. But luckily, I had also heard from the Master Osho that, guys, there is no cause and effect in this. If there was, he would have certainly given that to us, or Buddha would have done that already. I heard, which I couldn't understand, that it is already here. It's not to be achieved in the future. You don't have to do this, this, that, and the other, and then get there, because you are not separate from it. So, and then the practical life, yes, exactly. And us in the practical life. Yeah. Every day I'm learning little things, doing things that have to do with cause and effect. Yes, of course. Yeah. The way life takes care is not by putting the vegetable in the kitchen and the pot next to it, and then hope that something called life takes care to make it into a soup. Yeah. We have to do it and switch on the gas and chop up the things and put them in the pot. And again, that is the challenge, that our experience of the daily life, not even only the practical, the experience of the daily life, it seems to be all the time a cause of an effect. Just this morning, I stopped in the middle of a sentence to Sudeva. I was saying, oh, since I'm doing that, this and that in my health has improved. And I stopped and I said, delete that. It's nonsense. It looks like that. There is no way I can really know that that is so. It appears to have that effect. Whether that is medicine or a change of lifestyle or doing your yoga in the morning, it seems to be having effects, But even those, we cannot 100% prove that that is so. It has something reassuring to believe or to feel that it does. But at the core truth of it, it's like even with all these things, we don't know 100% that that is so. So yes, in the relative, in the relative, in that which relates with each other, cause and effect and all the formulas apply. And when it's about the truth of who we are and even how we are, then we need to be willing to leave that alone and face a radical not knowing and a radical, maybe I do this right, maybe I do this wrong, I don't know, a radical not knowing.
Yeah, I have a yes. Yes. I have a yes for that, what you are saying, and I understand it, and it says yes from my heart. But when I look back in my story, I see the moments of bliss or the moments of non-identification with the ego, that they happen mostly or almost every time in connection with some teacher, with some enlightenment man or woman. So mm-hmm. again, the mind says yes, but it seems to have an effect to be with these people.
It does. It does to the one in us that isn't free. An energy transmits to a part in us and creates a certain experience. It does. That is true too. We have been sitting in the same Buddha hall, right? And there was an enormous bliss emanating from Osho's presence, obviously. And by the time after the meeting, by the time we reached the canteen, I had certainly lost it. Yeah, just 50 meters behind the Buddha hall, standing in the queue, getting afraid that the person in front of me is going to take the last baked potatoes or so. That whole bliss experience had not completely vanished, but it shrank. That was borrowed, and it had to do with his presence, yes. And I have never experienced such a strong, I think it's called the Shaktipat. I'm not totally sure about the word. I have not experienced that so far anywhere else. And here's the thing. When I visited Papaji in 91, so that was like almost 2 years after Osho left the body, and I was around Papaji, there was that same energy, that same experiencing an energy, a bliss, a something. And it seemed not quite as strong, but exactly the same quality. My mind didn't make a big problem out of that. I was simply noticing that, and I thought, well, we are only 35 people here in his living room. Maybe it's different when it's 5,000 in a Buddha hall. So I didn't know, was that the presence of all of us sitting in these huge meetings, but it left an imprint. And after some weeks, my mind was still going, Is he lesser enlightened or what? You know, what did I know? Nothing, but the mind loves to think about such issues. And I walked in the ashram in Pune in the morning lecture. Morning lecture was an audio tape being played in Buddha Hall while people were gathering either in the hall or outside. I was sitting with my tea outside the Buddha Hall. I was just coming with my tea. And suddenly I heard Osho's voice say, "All awakened ones," that's what I remember. That may not be totally accurate, the quote. "All awakened ones share the same light, and they share it according to their former personality. There will be like an individual flare." I don't even think that these words are so deeply significant. But hearing that from Osho, while I was still wondering about the Papaji effect being different or a little, I felt it like a little less. And suddenly, boom, that whole thing lifted. It wasn't relevant. I had been sitting next to Papaji in pure bliss, truth, presence here now. And as I speak it now, it's like it's here right now. It also works through the memory. And maybe there was an immensity or a stronger vibe, but the truth, the presence, the bliss, that which mirrors to all of us, there is something that is not dependent of circumstance, something that is not the effect of a cause, something that is in your being present, always awake, always here, that which mirrors that, the light in us that is being shared, that is the same. I heard somebody else explain, a teacher in Goa on the beach, an Indian teacher in Goa on the beach. He said he sees Osho as an enlightened sphere, an enlightened ball emanating light in all directions simultaneously with the same strengths. And the common satsang teachers and us folk, we are representing maybe one ray of that sphere, the same light, but not that full-fledged sphere glowing everywhere in all directions in the same way. I don't know whether this is true or scientific. I can relate to it through my experience of Osho's presence, Papaji's presence, your presence, our presence right here, right now. It's a question of becoming still enough. And just for this moment, giving up the needing to know anything. Feeling this. It's right there. It's right there within us. It's right there within you. However it vibrates. You know, we need to learn the evidence, the reality, the truth of this by having these kind of experiences. If we had not been hit by the bliss waves in Osho's presence, we wouldn't be much interested in anything. If we were not hit by these kind of wonderful wrappings, I call them wrappings of the parcel. That's all the experiencing, bliss experiencing, Satori experiencing, joy experiencing, ecstatic spiritual experiencing. It's all wrappings of a parcel. And there comes a point where we need to say goodbye to all the nice wrappings and really take a look what's in the parcel, right in the middle of it. When there's no sensation, no big white light flashing in, nothing special occurring in the senses or elsewhere in the nervous system. They are indicators, they are gifts, these experiences. They don't mean something as such. Does that answer that question? Does that take that question away?
Yes, it takes the questions away. And at the moment, there are no others. Thank you.
And we have never been separate from it. That was somehow the revelation when my mind was capable of saying something again. It said, oh, I was never separate from Osho. And I will never be like him. Does that make sense? The never having been separate, that is the Anal Haq, that is that wonderful Sufi mystic. Right now, his name has slipped away. Sudeva, do you have the name of the guy who said, Anal Haq, I am God?
No.
And they killed him for it?
No. Something like
Manush, Manua. A Sufi mystic. He declared that, he discovered, I'm not separate from God. So he said, I'm God, Anal Haq. And he was killed. And that discovery of non-separateness, and at the same time, I will never be like you, and still I am you. I will never be like Osho, and still I am also Osho, like everyone and everything else. And that isn't an experience. That is not, it's not an anything that goes on and has a taste, a color, a feeling to it, or anything that can be defined as a proof that it's there. But it can be called an inner knowing. Or that brings us back to Devasetu's first question. That has something to do with wisdom. That's the inner wisdom, which we also don't have to achieve. It's right there. The more we are ready to let it take over and listen inside, listen to the Mother Earth, and the language in which the body and the earth talk to us may not be known, especially in the first moment of happening, may just be sounds or sensations. Listening is a very useful tool. Deeper than hearing with the ears. And listening can start with music. And then expand to something where every cell is participating in the quality of listening. Yeah. We can close our eyes, but we cannot close our ears. The sense of hearing is always operating, right? There's a certain quality in that. And the ears do not only register sound, they also register vibration, presence vibes. All has to do with listening. So when we start by listening to sound, to music, for example, then that gets sensitized inside and it teaches us how to listen inside. And maybe for what feels like a long time, there's nothing happening. And at some point, maybe there's so much resonance in that inner universe, and also a guidance and an inner knowing of what to do next in your daily practical life. It does actually work. It sounds a little bit esoteric, but it does actually work. That in slowing down, in stopping, and in listening, I find more useful support than in the actual always trying to do things right according to the formulas.
From your picture experiencing, perhaps we could change use of the phone.
You should switch your mic on when you speak, but I let everybody know. Sudeva, just let me know. Sudeva, please switch your mic and your loudspeakers off. Thank you. Sudeva, just let me know that my picture freezes. Is that for all of you? Please, hands up. Not. So that's okay, that's internal in this room. Okay. He sits actually opposite me over there. So on his own internet connection, we're not sharing the lines. So you can see me and hear me. And if not, I guess someone of you would let me know. All right. And thanks for mentioning it. It's quite disturbing when that happens. I have a taste of it. Okay. Yeah, that's the kind of things where we can try to do something, like log in again, change our internet connection from satellite to hotspot. Hoping that that helps. All right. And it's not only about questions, it can also be reports. Anything you like to share is welcome. I don't know if from YouTube or by chat. I'm paying attention to the chat.
Not yet.
Not yet. See, this is what I did today, because in my meetings, I usually don't pay much attention to the chat. The meetings are working by hand signal or the little Zoom signal. And today I noticed, oh, my eyes, my brain, my nervous system are not used to that chat reading. So I practice a little bit to train the eyes and the brain. And I found out how to make the letters bigger. So I wouldn't even need glasses. I enjoy such experiences. Yeah, that was a full-fledged success of discovering something useful on the computer. Yeah. And that is not, it's neither unwise nor unspiritual nor unanything. This chopping up our life experience into either normal or spiritual, that is one of the oldest pains of humanity. Somehow we maneuvered into this kind of separation of this is normal or this is worldly, it's usually called, and this is spiritual. And the truth is that there is no such thing on either end. Life is just life. Life has no clue how it is. It is a certain way in the moment, and we can only say something about that when the moment is gone. So there is no how life is. So how can there be a normal and a spiritual? And the only relevant difference there is whether we are awake or we are asleep in the moment. When we are asleep, we dream these dreams of being normal, being worldly, versus being spiritual, being meditative, and so on. When you're just here, just right now, exactly the way you are, there is no question of any such thing. How can who you are and what you are be normal or otherwise? You are who you are. You are how you are right now. You haven't even done it. It happens. It's an ongoing happening. Oops. Here's an interesting happening. Now I've successfully enlarged the letters so big that they are all under another vertically. One moment. Okay. I bring it to readable size. YouTube Water October. I have a notion who that is. Brushing aside formula looks like an exercise in self-involvedness and ignorance towards the reality of people outside the Western middle-class bubble. All this navel-gazing will help nobody who has to make a living in a declining capitalism. Where is the practical use of such spiritual discussions? Well, it confirms my notion who that might be, but I call it Welcome Rote October. The spiritual discussion here is certainly not going to help anybody survive in the world of nowadays, whether capitalist or other. It's not going to make money, not any to speak of, and that's not its purpose. And I don't know if you have been listening from the beginning when I clearly said in every aspect of practical life, we need the formulas, we need to understand the cause and effect, we need to look into what our actions provoke and how to do things. Otherwise, we can't get along. agreed. It's not, I'm not suggesting instead solutions here. I'm suggesting to finally embrace both sides. Also embrace the mess that the world is. And yes, when we are designed to work on in that realm and we have some clever solutions, let's do it. Nothing against that. The spiritual practice or discussion, the inner inquiries, they are not instead of the practical life. In order to learn it, we need to set a certain amount of time aside to learn this kind of practice until we go full circle. It is so well illustrated in the pictures of the 10 bulls of Zen. For those who may not know the 10 bulls of Zen, they are on my website under media. That is the story of the spiritual path and the full-fledged enlightened Buddha in the end. He goes in the village, shares with the villagers. He sits in the pub, has a beer with the farmers. That indicates the full circle. So yes, this world certainly needs to deal with a lot of problems, and especially right now. And I'm not saying sit at home and meditate and that takes care of the problems. Paying attention in the daily life as it is. That is what it is about in the end. That is what meditation is. Meditation is not the meditative exercises we do for a while. That is to train, to learn, to see it all. When we've learned that, we live very ordinary, very simple lives, dealing with what's in front of our nose and able to see it all without being trapped as being the victim of it or the doer of it or the possessor of it. And we can meet having money as much as we can meet having no money, and we don't have to judge that any longer. We can meet good health and illness and don't have to judge either. So that is what the spiritual discussions can be about, if anything, to bring us to that merging point where that painful separation of spiritual and normal daily life finally is allowed to merge, to dissolve. And if any of you likes to answer, where's the practical use of such spiritual discussion? I'm enjoying this immensely, to be allowed to meet you, to see you, to feel you, and to hear you, hear your reports or questions. And if anyone likes to let us know what is your practical use of the spiritual discussions, such meetings, feel free.
You need to turn your mic off for a moment so you can say something.
That's right.
Yeah, I find when I'm alert and awake in the present moment, I don't waste so much time on circling thoughts or what is maybe called anxiety. A lot of that drops away, and it's easier to actually to be alert to what to do and how to respond to life. So I feel like I function maybe a bit more effectively and more enjoyably. It's more relaxed. Although the mind would always tell me that, oh, if I would just get on and push on and do things, I would get more done. But it doesn't really work like that. And the question that goes along with this is, I still find I spend a lot of my time, what I would call falling back asleep, not being alert in the moment. And anything to say about samasati, staying present more of the time? Now I'll mute myself.
Microphone and loudspeaker. When either of us speaks in the same room, Sudeva and I, we need to switch it off on either computer. So, really, I think you gave the answer yourself. Samasati means the right remembrance, yeah? That's the translation of the word. And it doesn't mean the right doing or the right proving of your meditation or the right in that way. The right remembrance is the willingness and the ability to be here in this moment and to notice when you're not. Because we notice that kind of in retrospect. Oh, I was pretty gone the last little while or so. And there is that thriving for perfection. The mind has an idea, it has a taste, there is a taste, there is an experience of silent mind, there is that experience that you described, how meditative attitude makes life deeper and easier and more fun to live. And then, of course, there is immediately also the greed to have certain experience all the time. It's almost like that's always attached to any good experience. We want that to last. Samasati is for me another expression of seeing it all. The moment you see it, here, now, something relaxes, right? And usually what we see is anyway what has just been. Let it go, let it be past. But you see, you notice. And that very seeing brings you fully into the moment, which is where you want to be, which is where the other goodies start flushing in. Is that what you meant, Sudeva? Does that answer?
Yes.
Yeah. Samasati, the right remembrance. Mm. Actually, really, the realization of who you truly are is more of a remembrance than anything else. And it is here, right now. It's so close. So much one with us already that we overlook it. It's like trying to see your eyes with your own eyes. Yeah. And it's too simple for the mind. The mind wants to have that experience of there's A and there's B, and when I put these two together, then I get C. It wants this linear processing in time between cause and effect. Then it feels safe, it feels at home, feels in control. And all the really good and relevant stuff in our lives, when we look at it, hasn't happened in this way. It happened like a surprise or totally unexpected and so on. So,
Adima, when I see you and Sudeva, I ask myself whether it's necessary to have a spiritual partner if you are enlightened. Can you speak about it?
To have, whether it's necessary to have a partner.
A spiritual partner.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I get an idea what you are pointing towards, what you mean. Yeah? It's like with everything else, when you don't have any shared interests, then there isn't much of a meeting or what to enjoy together. Necessary, certainly not. Neither is a partner in that way necessary, nor does he have to be spiritual, the partner, he or she. No such thing. That's a question of programming of this human body-mind machine. Is it a relationship program or not? Apparently, my program is a relationship program that has always been part of my path. yeah, to learn through that, to grow through that. And I experience the full-heartedly declaration towards the divine. At some point, I meant it and said, well, if I have to give up relationship to be free, I'm willing to give that up. I had no idea what that meant. I had just heard that full-fledged awakening, after that you can't have a relationship anymore, or you can't relate personally any longer, whatever. I wasn't even very terrorized by hearing that sex might end. I didn't like that, but that wasn't so terrorizing. But that there would be no relationship, that terrorized me for quite a while, that idea. And at some point, I was just willing to let that go as well. And I had a beautiful relationship at the time, what I considered to be that, and it was that. And I almost yelled, I yelled at existence and said, okay, I'm ready. I want to be free. If I have to let go of this, then okay. And nothing dramatic happened after that declaration. It was for me to feel that. And the close partner is certainly always, the closer people are to us, the more they are capable to be a very accurate mirror. And also that is before, during, and after awakening. That's something, maybe that is a little tricky to understand. You know, I don't like that word enlightenment because it's so used. And honestly, I like to leave that with Osho. It's a question of definition, of course. What does that even mean? There is a useful hint in something Buddha has once said. And I don't know whether that is a quote or it is just one of the stories Osho told, and the story is true without having the source of where that is written. Buddha is supposed to have said that an awakening has to be over 50%, and then the rest can unwind. But you have to go over a certain zenith, or, yeah, over 50%. That is something the mind can understand. And then things of the programming will unravel, and they do. And close partners are certainly the best to show us where we have our little cloudy shadows, where the buttons can get pushed in the psycho-emotional realm. And that is, I welcome that as a humbling reminder of the human nature, and also of balancing. You know, it's a balance to all the nonsense of perfection ideas of how or what we would be as realized awakened beings. There's that dream of perfection, that we would never make a wrong decision, or that we would never this, that, or the other, not get angry, not get sad, not get whatever your preferred little inner monsters are. People often think that awakening gets rid of being a human being. That's not the case. It enables you to be all the experiences without judging them, without pushing them away. The filters that used to be in the way of direct experience, they break, those filters break away. So in a way, life gets a little more intense, a little more direct, and also a lot more simple. And in experiencing this daily life, that confirms, in case confirmation is still wanted or needed, whether you are peaceful, meeting all sorts of situations, whether you're not peaceful meeting that situation. And when you're very, very lucky, you are honest enough to admit to yourself when you start pretending to be peaceful to the situation because that looks more spiritual. The mind has a million possibilities to imitate and also to imitate enlightenment. It's actually very good at it. Ha! That is because we have all heard how heard or read or concluded or dreamt or romanticized how that enlightenment should be. And then we look for proofs. We look for proofs in other people. We look for proofs in ourselves. And that's part of the problem, that we're not free. People say things to me like, yeah, but I still get angry. So what? Can you be in that, present in the now, awake, aware, available, seeing it, being that too? And there may be a legitimate reason for that anger in the moment, right? Just like sadness, we usually don't have the same amount of bad judgments on sadness as we have on anger, yeah? Or lack. Lack, wanting, desiring more of something that isn't here. All the things that ail us in our programming. And this is, again, this is wise to expect that all of it can occur any moment. That is something, yeah, I think that's an easy one to understand. We have all heard that expression of oneness, being a oneness consciousness. So when we are aiming at that with awakening, to achieve the oneness consciousness, how can there be any kind of space or room where all the things go that we don't want? We can only be all. The oneness consciousness includes that we are also all the downsides, all the inner monsters, all the stuff that we don't like. It's part of the human nature. And yes, the more meditative, the more alert, the more peaceful we become, maybe there's less occurrences of certain negative emotion, less occurrence of certain reaction. And before you then believe, oh, you are the super enlightened, then I hope that you have a friend or a partner close enough to trigger something, to mirror the human nature aspects. We are dancing between that all the time. That has something to do with that infinity symbol, the figure eight. The energy is dancing both sides and through the still point in the middle all the time. So I'm glad to have Sudeva accompanying me. And there are moments where I consider I'd rather throw him out the window. I haven't done it. Anyway, in Australia, nothing much would happen because the entire house is ground floor. He would just end up on the lawn. But yes, it's an exquisite privilege to share these changing. It's not that I'm sometimes the spiritual teacher and other times I switch then back to myself and then I'm different. And of course, sitting here with you now in Zoom, I'm in that role of teaching, sharing. Yeah. And there's no need to prove normality by, I don't know what, maybe by poking the nose or so. Yeah. That would be as much nonsense as it would be to play some sort of superiority, insightfulness. We don't play, Sudeva and I, we don't play together. I see something that you don't see. Yeah? This game that you can play in the car with the kids. Yeah? Ich sehe was, was du nicht siehst. Yeah? We don't play that. And in that regard, it is a privilege to have such a close friend and lover and beloved to share this daily life and to share the depths and the silence and the noises. So thanks, Corinna, for giving me an opportunity to say that. Somehow the same question, when that question expands, it's the same question. Does one need a teacher? Does one need a master? Ultimately, not. Not necessarily. But for like, I don't know, 95 or 98% of all people, it makes the path and the learning and the unfolding a whole lot easier. Or more obvious, I should say. Easier in the sense of there it is, there's your thing to look at.
Adima, I hear quite often the sentence, the state of the world scares me. What can you say to that about that sentence?
It scares me too. It is scary to look at the state of the world, and that is not only since COVID and the war in the Ukraine, that is since quite a while, but it's much more obvious right now. It is scary to see what we as a humanity, we as a truly one mind and a truly one heart and a truly one being, what has happened, how much we have hurt the Mother Earth, how much we have hurt and are still hurting each other, how unjust and difficult we behave when it comes to sharing resources we all need, and so on and so forth. The world is always a mirror of the mind, an expression of the mind. And yes, that is scary, that is sad, that is heartbreaking. And let it scare you to the bottom of the heartbreak when it does that, feeling that, being also that. When it's just an argument of the mind to start running and a never-ending self-terror of living in fear by vibrating certain ideas, assumptions, conclusions, and speculations about the future. That is something that I would rather intend to help people to stop and use the energy in a more wise way. But yes, it is simply scary. And it's also ferociously angry making. It's all sorts of things, right? And we don't know where it's going. We can have a sense of our contribution of silence, our contribution of being willing to burn up completely in the flame of truth coming through our own heart. When you tune in to that inside yourself, you can have a sense, a feeling of the truth of that, that that contribution is something that helps the Mother Earth. It's something that helps the immediate energy field around you, and with that, the people who meet you. It may not look like much, and I cannot estimate or say how much it actually is, but I trust the power of that, the power of love, the power of loving. And right now, that loving also needs to include embracing the scary, the challenge of looking it into the face and acknowledging we are not even capable, not even with the best research on the internet, we are not capable to find out what the facts actually are. Who is doing what, why? The mess is, that's a personal opinion, I could say. I believe that the mess is so big that we have to stop speculating where it's going, which in itself is another blessing. When you stop speculating, speculating has to do with the future. That is always a very big energy loss. Yeah? So when we don't speculate, because we can't, then that energy comes back to us. It can be resourced inside into awareness, into loving awareness, into something that's worthwhile sharing. And I have personally never been very political. And the only one demonstration I've ever went to, or several of those, was when Osho was in prison and sannyasins were going on the streets in the big cities of Germany in the middle of really cold temperatures, winter, and demonstrating by sitting with hundreds and then thousands, because people joined us, sitting on the big marketplaces and also informing the crowd about that this innocent man had been put to prison in America. So those demonstrations I went to. And whatever made me go there, that has to do with a readiness to fight for truth, whatever sense that might make. And that readiness, I feel still like a flame. And in my immediate environment, when I see unjust stuff, there's a tendency to step in there. Sometimes the way certain people treat their children in public, I'm known to sometimes step in there. That's a question of how we are wired. As far as the world is concerned, we are pretty helpless. It's like neither of us as an individual can change that now. We can unite in loving awareness. We can unite in dedicating to that which matters, and that will nourish a certain strength, which also is helpful when we have to face difficult situations in the material, which may be coming up, when we learn to share, to have an orientation. How are our neighbors actually doing? Do they need anything? It happens naturally when you, the more energy you gather in yourself and give it to loving awareness in the moment, that also brings us to share with the next person we meet and the next circumstance and the next happening, and then to act appropriately, whatever that is. So I understand everybody who says that they are scared. And then the invitation is to feel that, to be that also. Because so much that we were used to is taken away, right? And just in case, I keep hearing that soon we have no more internet kind of announcements. Every now and then people are asking me about it, what I think of it, or informing that that is the next thing that might happen. In case that happens, every night, 7 p.m., wherever you are, whichever time zone we are in. If that happens, we cannot connect in these ways anymore. Every night, 7 p.m., wherever you are, whichever time zone we are in. And even if it's just for a few minutes, because you have to take care of putting the children to bed, or you are cooking your meal, you don't need to install a formal meditation. But doing that every night, remembering this, remembering Samasati, remembering loving awareness in the moment, and all the friends who love to be connected in this. I'm sure that this gives us an empowerment. So every now and then, I say that now, as long as we have the online meetings running, I'm not predicting. I have no idea. It's honestly, it is not on my vision screen that all this will be switched off rather soonish worldwide. But it might. If that happens, we connect in this way, and we can do it from now on as well. Just like an anchor, 7 p.m. And when you become aware, 7:15, don't blame yourself. It's just as good as 7. Time is a capricious lady. Time is not in the way of consciousness connecting, and certainly not in the way of love connecting. Conscious loving connection. Let's be true to that and remember that again and again. Is that sufficient answer to the world scares me question?
Yes. There's only one aspect I want to ask further on. Is it also the depressed feeling that scares? I mean, I see the world, and my thought maybe the world says the world scares me, but I have the suspicion that it's also some maybe structure or depressed feeling that scares.
Are you referring to something that vibrates in the collective around you, or are you referring to a personal pattern of depression?
Both.
Both. Well, that is clinically and technically, it can be both. And one can then resonate with the other. But honestly, what difference does it make? Is the depression causing the scare, or is the scared causing the depressed feeling? It's natural that in feeling the mess, that incredible mess that we are in this world, that this world is in, it's natural that that is a rather down spiraling experience. Yeah, it's not exactly an uplift. So whether the scared causes the depression, or the a depressive pre-programmed constellation causes the scare, the job is to embrace what is. In experiencing it without judgment, being available to it fully and aware in how it is. It comes and it goes. Maybe these days it comes much more often than we like it to. I notice, especially during night times and also during sleep, that there is so much, there seems to be so much more fear and depression in the air. Even here in Australia, which has a much less dense collective of mind because it's so much less people. Yeah. 3 million people and the size of Europe in our state. So few people. And still, here in the bush, in the middle of nature, that is tangibly felt, the build up. Yes, that is also there. And whether we have a predisposition of depression or not, when the vibes reach your system, you feel it. Can we embrace it as part of being this right now? This as well. That is what it asks, that we include it also. That's the true tantric way. Embracing all. Embracing also this. Before we start speculating what we can do about it, we need to go through the experience of being that. And if there is something that can be done, then because we are intelligent, awake, aware in the moment, what can be done will also reveal itself. Does that meet it?
Yes, very, what very. You meant? Very. It's touching answer from me. Yes, thank you.
And just, in waking up to the possibility to be your true self, which is much more than your personality self or your story self, we can also call it. That includes that you also experience, let's say, human experience that is not typical for you. Because you are suddenly not only that little you self anymore that you used to be, but you are all the possibilities. And there is a peace in opening to that. It's to the mind that sounds like rather not. Why would I also want to embrace depressive feelings of scare and so on? There's such a peace in being all. In truthfully meeting it, that's the point. Yeah, truthfully meeting it. When you meet something and you notice you full-fledged reject that, then meet your rejection. See how long that can prevail or not. And at any moment, we can always be ready also to join some positively intended and useful daily life actions to improve things. Let me know when you hear about such. I will do the same. Spread the useful information which is difficult nowadays, because what looks like useful information is also often not fully factual and or scientific. So we need to broaden the mind enough to allow also intuition, also feeling around the facts that we hear about things, and take it from there. I feel like I believe we are towards the end. I feel like doing something that Sudeva and I are often doing with our Tibetan pulsing meetings, that is like using our imagination, because the power of imagination is not to be underestimated. We use our imagination and spread your actual real arms out and imagine that we hold hands with the next person in this meeting. We become a circle in contact. And we breathe into our heart and let our love flow through our arms into our hands and connect with that next friend on either side in the circle. And as we sit here and feel that whatever the sensation might be in your hands, and maybe there's none, that's all part of the same connectedness. Being in this shared consciousness circle together. And let's just hum for a little while. Humming with the lips closed, but loose, like loose lips. And we hum a little bit together. Doesn't have to be om, just humming. Somehow I felt that little doggy visitor jumping in. So good, so welcome. Okay. Conscious loving is what connects us. It does that all the time. So let's stay tuned and let's stay true to that. Am I ending the meeting, Devasetu, or is that you? I can end the meeting? Okay. Thank you all for coming today.
Okay, thank you, Adima.
Most welcome.